From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of August, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll wrap up this week's Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour with Brian Grady. We'll talk about the Minnesota and Iowa numbers, and we'll have the finalized Pro Farmer numbers. That's the massaged set that they use as their official U.S. number for both corn and soybeans in yield as we head towards that September crop production report. And we'll do all of that, including talking with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible about the weather forecast right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world from WILL.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzulo now joins us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting for this Friday afternoon. Hey, Mike, thanks for being on board.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So a couple of things that we should go through, and I'll go through these quickly just because people will be wondering about them at this point. The numbers from the Pro Farmer Tour are out, and these aren't the tour numbers, but the Pro Farmer Massage numbers. They actually have released those, and we'll hear more about them in just a bit. They put the corn yield at 177.3 nationally, USDA at 178.4, and they put the soybean yield at 53 bushels to the acre. That's a big, big yield number, up 1.4 bushels to the acre from USDA's August number, which was a big one at 51.6. So there'll be some pressure on the marketplace, I suppose, on Monday, but I want to start in the soybeans in a slightly different place, because this afternoon or sometime today, the president was talking about trade and tariffs and saying that he did not want to finish up the talks with Korea and is no longer going to send Mr. Pompeo there to do that because he thinks China is involved. And this becomes a sticky wicket as we move forward, because now there's another outside influence that's clearly involved in the trade war with China. And I don't know how soon this can all be wrapped up. This looks like bad news to me, but you're the analyst and I'm not.
Well, it confirms, unfortunately, that there was the triangulation with the policy of our foreign policy and our trade policy and our currency policy. And I think this is where, unfortunately, by getting this news Friday and then seeing nothing done at the lower level of the U.S.-China trade negotiations this week, in hindsight, Todd, that's not a surprise now because of what you're expressing. And so why would we have any success with the lower level trade negotiations when the top level negotiations are about China helping the United States with denuclearizing North Korea? So what that puts in front of us now, going into harvest and going into these kind of numbers that Pro Farmer is pushing on the national bean yield because of these extraordinary pod counts, is the idea that those $200 billion of tariffs that everybody thinks probably are already factored into the market, many don't understand that it hasn't taken place yet because we're still under a comment period, that ends on September 6th. And so after September 6th, potentially 6,000 products, essentially half of all the goods that we import from China, could have new tariffs slapped on them. And I think that's where the real trade war begins. And so you have a new triangulation going on with the trade sanctions coming in on September 7th, the yield numbers coming in from Pro Farmer, and now the African swine flu, which is increasing substantially with the fresh USDA report supporting the idea that it's coming in the heart of China's production area of its country, that six provinces produce about 23% of China's pork production. Two of those six, right in the middle, have confirmed cases and more are being found. And so now you have the potential for even lower soybean demand going forward. And this is already starting to show up in the soybean price in Brazil this week, with it dropping. I think it's dropped around 15 or 20% in the last 3 weeks. And this week, I think it dropped another 5 or 6%. So the news doesn't get better for the soy complex, and the Pro Farmer numbers kind of keep the market signal to keep buying corn and selling beans, essentially.
Yeah, so what we see is large supply and demand destruction, actual, real, live demand destruction happening with the Chinese hog herd under disease attack at this point, and how widely that spreads and how deep it goes into the herd will make a big, big difference into how much soybean meal product they will need to feed that herd, right?
And it's backwashing. Yes, it's backwashing into our prices here already with Savannah at the river, essentially going from 60 under a month ago to $1.02 under. And Cincinnati has gone back and made new lows on its cash bean price and actually taken out its July lows when the $200 billion tariff talk started and was put into the marketplace. So it's a lot different situation than what we had a week ago. We had a much better looking technical picture. We had the fundamentals working more on our side. We had the prospects of NAFTA coming in and getting a deal done this week. And we had these talks between the United States and China coming in. And then Monday, with the crop conditions going down in corn, you had a lot more going for you. But you notice that these sanctions continue to play out in the currencies. And for me in particular, it did not match my expectations for getting some early week hedging done, because I was expecting and hoping that the prices would rally early in the week and I'd be able to get that $600 plus revenue per acre locked in on some more fall beans. And it just didn't happen because of the way things materialized. And now we're really in the thick of it with the 200-month moving average in wheat taken out and the 200-week moving average in the meal taken out. We've lost a lot of key backbone chart support.
Desperately seeking good news. Anything on the corn side? Well, I guess maybe there was a little drop in the number, or could be, based on Pro Farmers 177.3, but that's still a big, big yield.
It's a decent yield. I think the trade's going to massage that number, though, given the test weights and the fill. At least that's my sense right now. I think the big thing with the corn is that we have some undervalue price action in the corn. If you take the beans out of it, it's a fact now that, other than the wheat, which was very disappointing again this week with its price action, is actually the leader to the downside in percentage terms. If you take the wheat break of almost 7.5% out of the picture and you take the pressure and the soy complex out, I think corn has a very bright picture. But how do you dislodge those two major things from the corn? Well, you can't. So essentially, we're waiting on a wheat low again, which I suspect is going to be around the $5 level in the soft red futures. And cyclically, this would be the end of the month, at the August end of the month, beginning of September, wheat tends to pick up a little bit more buying based upon the last few years. So I think corn has some upside to it, as long as beans don't get too out of hand, and once we find some support in the wheat. So the same methodology is still being recommended, you know, and with clients and subscribers. Move on the beans. I know how ugly the basis is, but I think it's going to be better property to buy back on paper than it will be to hold in the bin, because the Brazilians are getting ready to plant again, and we need to just wait for a fresh El Nino weather scare there to get us a futures market rally to help improve our price, it seems to me.
It'll be about 2 weeks from now till I talk to you again, because next week I'll be out on vacation. Any final word before I let you go?
Well, perfect way to put a plug in for the website. Go to globalanalytics.biz and sign up for a trial while you miss Todd for 2 weeks.
All right. I love it. That's perfect. Hey, thank you so much.
Happy anniversary. I hear you're celebrating your 30th. Congratulations.
We are on August 27th. That's Monday is our 30th. So we're going to take some time off and we'll be back the following week. I appreciate it much. And you have a good week, Michael.
You must have a great wife like me.
I do indeed, just like you. Okay. Hey, thanks so much, Michael. Michael Zuzlo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We're again joined this afternoon by Brian Grady, the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter. He's been out on the Midwest Crop Tour all week. They've released the numbers finalized, as they will come out from Pro Farmer, and we'll get those official numbers for corn and soybean yields in just a bit. But I'd like to go, Brian, through the numbers you released last night as they relate to the states of Iowa and Minnesota. You traveled in both of them. Can you give me an idea of what you saw over those couple of days?
Well, my trek through Iowa was the eastern half. And so we saw a lot of the better stuff aside from that southeast area down in there that was just too dry and hot, and saw their yields trim back because of that. But when you get up north of Interstate 80 and in that area up to the Minnesota border, it's pretty pretty good this year. Fairly ideal growing conditions for many of those guys, and as a result, some pretty big yields were pulled out of there. For the state as a whole, we ended up with a yield of 188.2 bushels per acre, up 4.7% from last year in the state. And, you know, really, when you look at the state of Iowa, I talked about the really good conditions in east central and northeast Iowa, the poor conditions in the southern tiers of counties across the entire state. And then in the northwest and north central areas, it was just too wet, and it pushed back the plantings, and there's holes up there. So we've got very wide variability in the state this year. And, you know, it's a matter of, can the really good offset the poorer areas, or do the poorer areas pull down the really good ones? And that's going to be the determinant on how the crop finishes up in the state this year.
By comparison to the USDA number, which was released in August at 202 bushels, the 188.2, and I don't know what your miss in Iowa happens to be, but I can't imagine it's very much given the number of routes that you run. This seems like a pretty big difference, just like it was in Illinois.
Yeah, you know, I guess the Iowa crop, the difference between what we saw in Illinois and versus Iowa is Iowa isn't as mature. The finish line isn't there yet for the Iowa crop, which was the case in Illinois. So it could either add some bushels or maybe some subtract bushels if late season growing conditions aren't good. But we have moisture here. We'll see what kind of heat we get. But if it is an extreme heat, I think it's, you know, it might actually help a little bit given the soil moisture that the state has right now.
And you put the Minnesota number at 178.67 bushels to the acre.
Yeah, that was down 6.7% from last year on tour. And Minnesota was the only state amongst the seven that we sampled in that had a lower year-over-year yield. And, you know, I think that's reflective of the fact that South Central, Southwestern Minnesota just really struggled this year. That, you know, excessive moisture that I talked about for North Central and Northwest Iowa was the case across the border, too, in South Central and Southwest Minnesota. Guys that just couldn't get the crops in time. And as a result, a very immature crop up there compared to the rest of the Corn Belt. And, you know, it's a crop that's probably running out of fuel into the finish line.
And finally, just in the last hour or so, you guys at Pro Farmer have gotten together, took a look at all the numbers from across the seven states, and then extrapolated those out into a national yield. What did you come up with for corn?
Well, the national yield, 177.3 bushels per acre, that would equate to a production number of 14.501 billion bushels. Now, we put a plus or minus 1% on it, and that would give us a range from 175.5 up to 179.1. On the yield, and 14,356 to 14,646 on the production side of things.
And you're well within the range of USDA's current number, 178.4. Do you think the lean will be higher or lower as we go towards harvest season?
Well, that 177.3, which is our average number there, the estimate, That would indicate that we feel like it would be pulled down just a little bit. Now, you know, how the crop's going to finish, obviously, a lot of the corn is already really close to the finish line. And we've talked about that with you through the week here that in the Eastern Belt, a lot of that is close to being ready to harvest. Not the case in Minnesota, not the case in Iowa, and quite you know, interestingly enough, those two states are the only two of the seven that had a lower than a year ago ear count. Everybody else was up on ear counts across the Corn Belt states that we were in. So, you know, we feel like that's going to be a driver of production and yield those extra ears, even though we may find some lighter test weights because the crop was pushed a little bit into the finish line and is ahead of normal.
And before we get to the yield number for soybeans, I think it's important for everybody to recognize there is a difference between the tour number and the pro farmer number we're talking about now. What is that exactly?
Well, everything we release Monday through Thursday is tour sample data. So we go into fields, we pull samples, we come out, we put it into our equations and add it all up at the end of the day and give you those state results. That's 100% tour driven. On Friday, the numbers we released at 1:30 Central Time, they are the tour data plus other factors. So anything else that could influence those areas outside of the tour states where we sample from, late season weather, how the crop will finish, what we feel like test weights will be, those types of things all come into play in the pro farmer estimates, and they are independent of the crop tour. The crop tour is by the mercy of our wonderful crop scouts who are out there in the fields helping us gather the data. We are able to do that. The pro farmer numbers are not associated with crop tour scouts in any way, shape, or form. They are 100% pro farmer numbers.
What were the outside influences that took up most of your discussion as you were coming up with the official pro farmer numbers?
Well, I think this year, because we measured more yield than potential, what's going to weigh, especially the corn crop, because we've been pushed and pushed, but really, we've moved forward our pollination period. And I don't know if we've been pushed from pollination forward as much as some may believe. So that did have an influence and was the primary discussion factor. Whether or not we feel like that increase in ear counts, and USDA told us there were record ear counts in the 10 objective yield states. We found it out there on crop tour. That was a big influencer as well, the fact that we have more ears out there. So you can back off a little bit on grain length. You might be able to back off a little bit on weights, and those extra ears just add that many more kernels.
So let me just clarify to make sure I have this right. Your discussion point was, yes, we know that from planting to pollination, we moved really quickly in growing degrees. Days pushed that along. But from pollination through grain fill to this point, you think has been more normal than not?
Well, I think that one of the things out there right now is that everybody looks and they say that the crop is 1 to 2 weeks ahead of normal, if not more than that. But what they don't take into account always is the fact that pollination was moved forward as well. So, we got to pollination pretty quickly this year. So the second half of the fill process here, probably, it's been more rapid than normal, but I don't think it's been quite as rapid as what some perceive it to be.
USDA's August crop production number for soybeans was at 51.6 bushels to the acre. That surprised the market. It's a big, big number. Your number's bigger at 53 nationwide. Why is that the case?
Well, pod counts, to be honest with you. We went out in all seven of the tour states, and we saw a significant increase in pod counts year over year. The percentage increases range from 6.9% up in Minnesota to 14.9% up in Nebraska, and every one of the seven states falls within that range. So there's a lot of pods out there. It's a healthy soybean crop, and it got rains here during crop tour week. And typically when you're getting rains at this time of year, that's a good sign. And it's a really good sign, in our opinion, when you have that many pods and you're putting rain on it.
Hey, thanks for working with us all week, Brian. I really do appreciate it.
You bet, and I appreciate the ability to allow us to get it out.
Brian Grady is the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter. We've been talking about the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour with him this afternoon and the official numbers as they were released today, not for the tour, but from Pro Farmer as it relates to the U.S., as it relates to the size of the U.S. crop. Pro Farmer has now put the U.S. corn crop at 177.3 bushels to the acre. USDA was at 178.4 in August. USDA in August had the soybean number at 51.6 bushels to the acre. Pro Farmer says it should be 53 bushels to the acre. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Thanks, Eric, for being with us. I guess you'll be looking forward next week to having students in class here on the U of I campus.
Yeah, I'm avoiding campus today, actually. I'm kind of hiding out because I know that move-in weekend is kind of crazy. But you know what's funny is they're all getting slowed down this morning by all the, you know, the really soaking rain that came through. And I'll be honest, you know, a couple of days ago when I was watching this forecast, it was a big question mark as to whether or not the rain was going to be able to make it to Indiana. We just didn't know if we'd run out of enough moisture, and certainly it did. And so this soaking rain's been nice because anything that was late planted is going to benefit from it, you know, but most of the Illinois corn and soybean crop was finished. And so this rain wasn't as nearly as big of a deal as it would have been in previous years. But certainly, you know, as it moved through, gave everybody a good soaking this morning. And the big question we have right now is, do we have another round of storms developing later on this afternoon and evening? You know, forecasting severe thunderstorms is very, very challenging, even 6-8 hours out. We're just looking at the latest model runs, which suggest we could be watching for a line of storms that could be oriented like northeast to southwest from Chicago over toward Missouri down towards St. Louis. And what's interesting is that the models right now are attempting to kind of break that line into two segments, missing parts of east central Illinois. So we're going to have to watch this one carefully to kind of see what we're going to get later on this evening as a second round of this comes through. So in the short term, things are looking pretty wet.
So for those students who have arrived on campus, will they get wet tonight as they decide to go out for the weekend?
That's the thing. And you know what? If they consume enough alcohol, it doesn't really matter, right? They won't even know that they're wet. But, that first weekend back is usually a pretty big party weekend. But I'll tell you this, those students, they definitely need to make sure that they brought their summer wardrobe because by Sunday, we're going to be seeing a pattern shift. And here's what I'm watching. In the Gulf of Alaska, developing over the next couple of days, there will be a pretty substantially large ridge. And if you just think about the wavelength of the trough ridge pattern, that tosses a trough over the Pacific Northwest. They couldn't be happier that that's going to happen because it's cooler, windier, and wetter weather for them, which means it clears out the smoke. But for us, this is going to allow a ridge to be building basically across the eastern half of the country. And that ridge is going to return us back into the upper 80s and potentially the lower 90s. But this is what's interesting. The position of the ridge does not shut down Gulf moisture. So it's going to get hot and humid. And we're actually looking at next week, maybe a couple of chances for us having some more thunderstorms come through the area. So while the pattern is certainly not showing us staying cool any longer, what it is doing is it's showing us heating up with the chances for some storms. So, this is a wet kind of finished to the growing season here. And while it gets warm, we don't turn off the moisture stream. And as a consequence, we could get some more showers and thunderstorms throughout the next 7 to 10 days.
Okay. On that note, it seems to remind me that the hurricane season, still in flow at this point, usually will come out of the tropical Atlantic and give some rainfall sometimes to the Midwest as those bowl right up the Mississippi River Valley Basin.
Yeah, you're right. And so we've really seen a suppression of the tropical season so far this year in the Atlantic. And part of that's due to really four main things. It's been very windy. Hurricanes don't like that. They like still environments. Also, the ocean temperatures have been cool. There's been a lot of Saharan dust. In fact, some of that Saharan dust has made it all the way to Illinois, believe it or not. And in the upper levels, we've had subsidence. That's air that's descending. And that's all about to change. We're about to move into a time period here, really over the next 10 to 15 days, where we shift away from all of that. Which is going to allow for some tropical systems to get going. And this is the time of year we'd expect it, right? The end of August, beginning of September. Remember, September 10th is the peak in hurricane season historically. So there's one system we're watching emerge right now off of the west coast of Africa. It's going to be moving into relatively favorable environment. The National Hurricane Center is giving it a halfway decent chance of developing. It's still 2 weeks away from being anything that we'd have to worry about here in the United States. But it's a signal that, hey, our attention needs to turn south and east, because you're right, we can have these big precipitation makers that come off the remnants of these tropical storms and dump a lot of rain on us when we're trying to harvest a crop and let that crop dry down in the field. So we'll be watching it carefully, and we'll keep updating you.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extensions Todd Gleason.